Welcome to Live Action Star Wars. I'm Ralph.
I'm James.
And today we are discussing Andor Episode 9. Nobody's listening.
Shh. Nobody's listening.
Do you think, is it true? Is nobody listening?
I think it might be. The context for the nobody's listening is in the cells, in the corridors, all those sorts of places. In the prison, no one's listening to them because they don't need to.
Could I tell you who is listening?
Who is listening?
StreamYard
is listening. You're right. Thank you, StreamYard. So,
last week we raised a stink and then sent a couple tweets to him just saying like, hey, listen, like,
we have ideas.
We like it. We have ideas. Here's a thing.
Yeah.
After the show, I posted the audio. I mocked it up. I said, here, lay it out like this and we have access to everything we need. And they replied with the sort of the classic, we'll run this, we'll send this to our team and see what they think. And I was like, okay, cool. And if you ever need testing, let me know. And they're like, we don't do that thing, but if we do, we'll let you know. And
we'll keep your address in the book.
So thanks to StreamYard and Julie from StreamYard who responded to us. Hopefully it works out. I mean, I like StreamYard.
It's really cool.
Man, if things were streamlined, it would be great.
Streamlined. I don't know. I'm getting confused. It's an hour earlier for me today, so I'm a little bit loopy.
Stevie says she's listening.
Hey.
Sarah's here. Scotty is here. And
I was thinking about this last week. We need a name for our loyalists, and I think it should just be the Loyalist Committee. Like, you know, it was Padme and Jar Jar and Bail Organa and all those guys in episode 2. They were the Loyalist Committee.
Can we take like ISB and change the what it stands for?
Let's workshop it. And if you guys who are a part of this group, like, you know who you are, if you've got any suggestions, shout them out, because you guys need a collective name, because you're here every week and we love you for it.
Yeah.
Just something I was thinking about over the last week. It'd be
yeah,
fun.
It seems like we had, like, when I did the Darmalars, we had the Darmal Army. I guess the Darmal Army still exists. You're part of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody has that. So, let's figure it out. Workshop
we'll
it. Out.
We'll get
One bit of business is yesterday. I did a live stream for my Patreon, but it's free for everybody. So if you go to youtube.com/@casinoskunk, because handles I guess are a thing now, I did a stream, but I made it public. It was a Patreon live stream and it was public, and I got three new subscribers to my Patreon last night.
That's great.
And so I added their name to the end of the list for those of you that stick around through the entire feed. There's a list that scrolls of everybody who's part of Patreon. I just want to let everybody know I changed it up.
So definitely stick around this week.
It's no longer in alphabetical order.
Okay.
It is now based on how long you've been a patron member.
Ah, interesting.
So there's sort of a pecking
hierarchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got to stick around longer to wake your way up the chart.
It's something that Jay does, former guest of the show, Jay does on his Patreon. He just puts them up alphabetically or by chronologically, which for me works great. Because the thing is, that's a video file that I have to go into Final Cut and update every time somebody leaves or sometime when somebody new comes in. So it's easier just to tack the new person on the end, export the file, and then upload it to StreamYard. So it's functional, but also I feel like it's kind of nice to have people be like, Michael David's number one.
There you go. He's there.
So he'll be number one for as long as he's on there, and he can claim that position. So,
and then if you see yourself sort of jump up the list, if you watch through, you're like, ooh, someone left. This is good. I don't know. It gamifies it a little bit, doesn't it? It makes it like the prison on Narkina 5.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like anyone's leaving. Those people, that list there would be quite static, I think. Like, the only time people would leave is when they die.
Or get fried. Reminds me of Logan's Run.
Yeah, there is an element to it.
Everybody's leading, it's all leading up to last day, and they're going to Carousel to renew, and guess what? people don't renew on Carousel.
I mean, it's been done a lot of times. Like, it's, you know, it's Logan's Run, it's THX, it's Squid Game recently, there's a lot of similarities. The Island, the Michael Bay film, like The Island, all of these, yeah, they're all very, very similar. Like, they're of a theme, they're of a piece.
And what's great is we were talking about Andy Serkis last week being like a company man and being in this, and no matter how hard he's working. Okay, two things going on in this episode that I absolutely love. Him. Andy Serkis realizing that he may not be getting the recognition or reward that he thinks he's getting for his hard work.
Yeah.
Then you have Dedra, who we'll get to it in a bit, where Cyril is being a fucking creeper.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he thanks her, her face changes and her mood shifts just so slightly to the point where she's also working her ass off.
Yeah.
And this is the first time anybody's thanked her for her hard work. So it's like two sides of the coin happening. It's
the appreciation of that. Like, she sees that, like, there's some other people in the ISB, like, they know that she's doing the right thing, but it's like, watch your back. It's a, okay, yeah, we'll get you there, but watch your back. It's still that case of like almost being talked down to, and like, they're sort of being quite patronizing to her in a little bit, whereas he's sees her and is kind of reverent. It's like, it's a reverential sort of like, you're great, I'm really looking up to you, I want to work for you, sort of. Yeah,
yeah,
he's a zealot. It
was weirdly like a romantic scene that purely based on career.
Yeah, it was like an asexual romantic thing where it's like, I don't think he's got any interest in her in that way, but he loves her. He wants to be.
And not even like, not to make it, I don't know. She is in public when this happens,
mm-hmm,
and she's doing everything to be composed,
mm-hmm,
and she gets to her office and she couldn't get her assistant out fast enough,
yeah,
to get the door closed behind him. I think to just smile.
Yeah.
Like,
to like, sort of like enjoy it. Yeah.
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 it's this show is so good.
I mean, it's nice to see you. Like everyone's agreeing with it as well. It's, yeah. Right. Everyone's coming in saying how much they love this show.
Sorry, I had to change the background of my computer. My face looks so orange. My computer's orange, and right now I have an orange wallpaper to sort of match the aesthetic because I'm a nerd. It's like a painting of like a comic book poster art of Ray with this orange fiery background, and my face was so orange. So now it's black. A black background. Okay.
Oh, good.
Sorry, had to be.
Done. It's all good.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah, so that was the one side. And then the other one, as you said, was Kino Loy, Andy Serkis' character. And yeah, last week we were dead set on, like, he's no good. He's not going to be helpful to Cassian and everyone else in that prison. Like, but now, I think after everything that went down in this episode and what he found out, I think he's going to be right there with him. I think he's going to be trying to escape.
Yeah, he goes from telling them to shut up while he's trying to sleep to
being
huge doubts.
Yeah.
Like huge and doubts on what this is.
I think it's the thing as well. Like, he sees his number going down. In the grand scheme of things, he doesn't have long left. He's got less than a year left. And he's just seen a guy who he's obviously, like, he's known for probably his entire sentence, and who's got 40 shifts left. He's there for 40 more days. Month. Yeah, exactly. He's got 1 month left. And he dies. And, like, that's the end of it. And even beyond
that.
But
not just die. Not just die. Like, he's put down. He's disposable.
Exactly. Like, just need the bag and a car.
And the doctor, who's also a prisoner,
yeah,
takes care of every single floor.
Yep.
Says, listen, this is better than you're going to get.
It's better than what's happening on 2. You know, it's like... Yeah. And that's when they get confirmation. Like, they've heard rumors. They're sort of receiving signals. They're receiving these rumors about the stuff on 2. But this is the confirmation. Someone who's sort of seen it firsthand. And yeah, holy shit. And so that is the moment, I think, that switches in Andy Serkis. Is he's going, yeah, all right, they doubled our sentences, but still, I'm less than a year. I can do that. I can survive it. I've been here for who knows how long. But now
he's trying to be positive before that. He's trying to, when he has his hands over his head, you can tell when he says, this is a rumor. We don't know if it's true or if
he's trying to shut it down.
That's him trying to be like,
and he's in his weird, positive, quite twisted way. He is encouraging them all as they're working.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is twisted and he is feeding into that thing. But it's like, guys, you know, getting flavor and taste once in a while is quite nice. You know, it's better than getting shocked. And it's like, yeah, he's ruthless. He is harsh when he's punishing and the way he's running his floor. But he's clearly had success with it up until this point.
I've worked a desk job for about, I don't know, 7 years. And then I worked a blue collar custodial job for 15 years.
Mm.
And both of them went unappreciated. Mm-hmm. And you do, like, I put everything into my work that I could.
Doesn't matter what you do. Like, I'm the same way. It doesn't matter what you do. You take pride in it, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, you realize, like, all of that hard work, when you're gone, like, when you leave that job, they don't remember you.
I don't give a shit.
So, like, who even gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Why put in any of your mental effort into either job when you're not appreciated at either of them?
Mm-hmm.
So with Dedra, her getting the crumbs of someone thanking her,
yeah,
seemed like a big deal.
Yeah.
But she's still such a company person that she can't show that excitement in public.
Mm-hmm.
And then with, I don't know Andy Serkis's name.
Kino Loy.
With him, it's, I've been working my ass off for this major reward at the end of it, but freedom. You might not even get that award.
Yeah.
Reward. Yeah. Like, here's this dude who's been doing it probably longer than me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his reward is,
get sick and die.
Relief from pain.
Yeah. And a stroke as well. We mentioned a few episodes ago how, like, we've never seen a heart attack in Star Wars before. Now we're seeing a stroke. It's like, these are all like real world, like, nasty things that, you know, I feel like almost everyone knows someone who has had a heart attack or a stroke at some point in their lives. It's very relatable. And it's not, oh, he's overworked and he's got carbon poisoning from all these machinery. It's not like some spacey thing. It's just, dude got old and overworked and had a stroke. You know, it's like, fuck. It hits harder when it's something more
and relatable. And even when you knew, like, it almost, like, Andor doesn't really deal in sort of cliches that much.
No,
like, we knew the kid was gonna die during the heist because he was so whatever.
There's tropes, there's tropes, but it's not the cliche of it.
But it's not the way you think. Uh-huh. It's not some big sacrifice. And in this one, I'm like, oh, they're setting it up because the old guy's gonna die, and that's gonna have a big effect on everybody. But the way it was handled was a little bit different than normal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't melodramatic.
Give the character some credit. We were calling him the guy from Batman last week. It's Ulef is the character's name.
That's right.
I had to look it up, but yeah, it's Ule.
Well, they mentioned it a couple times.
Yeah, that's why episode. I wrote it down. I wanted to add it to our list of things.
But his death, like, it's sort of telegraphed.
That's dark, Tristan. That's very dark.
But probably the same.
Yeah.
Very man, it was pretty, like, with Andor there and with Kino there, like, it's like those are the two guys that sort of needed to see this happen.
Yeah. That's it. Andor is, he's already, like, beyond anything. If he didn't get Kino on his side, if he didn't get the help, he's working on stuff. We see him working on stuff. He's got other people from other tables, it looks like, he's been talking to. He's got the guys on his table, and then, you know, he's going in to use the refresher, and he's got that panel that he's doing something. He's whittling away at some cable there. It's very sort of Shawshank, like a few millimeters maybe each shift. Like, it's nothing much, but they're doing something. I thought it was interesting in the corridors, those scenes in the corridors that we get, which were my favorites of this episode, where Andy Serkis, Kino, knows what these guys are doing. He knows that they're all communicating, and they're not trying to hide it from him either. Like, he's in the same boat. He is a prisoner, and he'll tell them, like, guys, come on, sort your shit out, get together. We don't all want to get fried here. But, like, there's that sort of back and forth where they're like, all right, but hang on, just we're just having this conversation. We're just trying to find out what's going on. And it's a frustration, and he's not like berating them for it, because, you know, I think if there was
definite... He wants to know too.
Yeah, I think he's like...
He wants to know what's going on too.
He's tempering it down because he's more like, yeah, look, it's going to take ages for like some real word to come up from two, because it's all the way around the other side on the opposite side and loads of layers down. The silo of it all reminded me a lot of, there's a book series, I think it's called The Silo Trilogy. It's Wool, Shift and Dust, I think are the three books, by Hugh Howey. Really, really good books. And it reminded me a lot of that, where everyone's got their place, everyone's got their thing, and no one really knows what the hell is going on other floors or at other points. It's keeping everyone isolated, and that's the type of prison that it is. It's really, really interesting.
And I agree, Andy Serkis, like, he's really good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
It's he's one of the most sort of, like, everyone, whenever he pops up, it's like, oh yeah, it's Andy Serkis, he's great. And then he'll do a thing, he'll have a moment, he'll have a bit of performance where it's like, holy shit, he's so good. And the shot
have you seen The Adventures of Tintin?
Yeah.
He's amazing in that movie.
He's amazing. He's so, so good. And like and that's the thing, we're used to seeing him motion captured, whether it's like in the Planet of the Apes movies, he's amazing. He is the star of those, and I'm glad that by the end of it, he is like the top build. He's great in everything. Like, obviously you go back to Lord of the Rings and everything since. But in this, where that shot that we've used as our thumbnail for this episode, where his hands are on the head and it's sort of just a close up on his face and his eyes, you see the doubt, you see the change in him, and it's eyebrow acting. It's like, it's acting crazy without words. And it's so good. You can just see it perfectly.
Because we're so used to him being like caricatures, even as Snoke, like he has
mannerisms.
There's a grand sweeping thing, but
this is something subtle that I wanted to bring up as well. Tristan was a prison guard when I met Tristan. He was a customer of mine at the comic book shop, and was a prison guard at the time. And hearing that, most wings have a guy like Serkis managing there. It's really, really interesting hearing all of that sort of stuff.
And hearing him know this whole time, knowing there's only 12 guards, there's only 12 of them
per floor.
He's had to have thought about this before. Like Andor says, tell me you haven't thought of this before already. Like,
and there's 49 prisons to 12 guards. Like, that's, you know, definitely in their favor if they wanted to try something.
And today we get the sort of plan of bum rushing the lift.
Yeah. Well, it's teased in, is it? And I thought it was interesting. I didn't even put it together that the other side of their corridor is the day shift, like day shift, night shift sort of thing. It's like, I didn't put that together at all.
Are one of them leaving and one of them coming in?
Yeah. So like basically, there's always someone on the floor.
It's basically like Metropolis. If you've seen Fritz Lang's Metropolis, it's very much the same way, where they all shuffle in together. The day shift is moving a little bit slower, leaving, and then the night shift.
As someone who works a 12-hour shift and like sees the day shift twice a day, sort of thing. Like, you know, there's any two in, two out at any point, but it's very similar sort of thing that I have every day.
Speaking of references to other things, we get a Star Wars shot in this show during the interrogation of Bix. We get the door closed, the camera pans down and then follows the footprints out the hallway. I kind of got excited about it, but I also kind of was like, no, Andor, you don't have to make Star Wars references. This isn't you.
We got it. Yeah.
I thought, and for a second, I thought the interrogation, they talked about him, the torturer guy doing experimental interrogation stuff. I'm going to be like, oh, is he going to have the first droid with the droid ball, but it's going to be like exposed parts. I'm like, Andor, don't do it. And they didn't. And I was so excited.
But then they do the Star Wars shot. But I mean, I feel like it's just shorthand, you know, it's a shorthand it is the exact shot from Star Wars, but like, I don't know if it's necessarily being referential to that. I think that might just be us knowing Star Wars so well. I think that's Like, that's just shorthand for any torture scene that they don't want to actually show it.
Yeah, it's just, I'm just like, and what the, so it was, not being Star Wars.
Dr. Gorst seems like a creeper. He's definitely creepy because he seems to be taking pleasure in his job.
I'm glad we didn't hear the sounds, because I can't even imagine like Matthew Wood being able to come up with some sort of sound design that conveys what you're hearing. And so them having the headphones makes your imagination like.
I think it was, I thought it was brilliant. As soon as he brought it out, I was like, oh, please do it. Please strip the sound away. And they did, like, they strip it out completely. Yeah. And that's excellent. Like, it's way more effective not hearing what it is, especially having it having it described to us. Like, you can just picture it being this most sort of horrible, torturous.
And that's the thing too, is the anticipation of him describing it to her as part of the torture, and then him bringing the headphones over. Like, your brain is like now going like, what is it that he's going to put in my ears? And so, as the audience and as the character,
it was actually just Spice Girls Wannabe. That was it, just on repeat. The fish in a net, the fit, are you a fish or are you a thief? That's a repeated line, isn't it? Was that DJ who said that previously, or was that Luther?
I can't remember who said it,
but like, I couldn't remember if it was DJ or if it was Luther saying that's Cassian. And if it is, that makes it even more interesting, I think. But it was a line that I'm sure that we've already heard in the show before.
Well, if Luthen says it to Cassian, that probably means that he's been interrogated by the Empire.
Maybe. Or at least has had runnings with that sort of doctrine, like that way of thinking.
Thinking about this episode, I think my favorite thing from the episode, and it's so silly, is that you have the ISB. And we've seen the ISB like trying to get anything they can on the situation on Aldani and what's going on with the rebellion and everything that's going on in the galaxy that's going wrong. And right now, the only thing they have to go on is they're looking for a guy who shaved his beard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, you guys are grasping for anything, where a guy who left the planet with a beard and came back clean shaven. That's the big thing. And like, yeah, you've already got him.
They've already got him. Like, but that's brilliant. That's the best place to hide. It's such a hobbit move, isn't it? It's like, it's right under their nose. Like, he is in the most well hidden place, because they're not going to be looking for him in their own prison system. It's fascinating.
It's that whole ISB or
the Old Republic version of it. There was the clone intelligence units, but yeah.
It's the whole thing in Star Wars where the guy comes up to Tarkin. It's only 30 rebel ships. There's nothing to worry about. And that's the thing, is the rebellion is really small, especially right now. Luthen knows his group is 3 people.
Yep.
Him, Mon Mothma, and Clea, and Vel knows.
I'd put Vel in there.
It's small.
It's cells. It's like tiny little cells. And yeah, some of them are more built up. You've got Saw Gerrera's group. You've got the other Partisan United whatever thing. Like we know that around this sort of time, Phoenix Squad are starting to form. Like there's pockets of rebellion all around. Like, but they aren't brought together at this point. So there is no Rebel Alliance.
But what's great is what this show does. It shows you the scope of the Empire. Every single planet we've been to, there's been an Imperial presence. When we go to Coruscant, those ISB guys are walking everywhere.
Yeah,
they're just everywhere. And meanwhile, we have like tops 10 people to root for against this whole army of people. And to hear that there's only 12 guards on the floor, like, it's like, oh, there's some hope there.
they can get through it.
So it's like, this is where we can get our, you know, our foothold. And I'm wondering, I still am wondering what kind of parts they're doing. I know you have a theory, and then, but also how are they going to get off of this planet?
Well, that's it. They don't know what the, like, cause it looked like they were sort of the intake procedure was ship comes in, they get off, ship leaves, then they're processed. And it's like, there's nothing, there's not landing pads. There's not, you know, there's not a vehicle transfer thing. It's how the hell would they get through that? They're going to have to wait for a ship and then try and steal a ship.
Or whatever they're loading, whatever they're creating, clearly they're manufacturing something that has to get loaded to be put together, whether on Corellia or wherever.
Wherever it's going, yeah, whatever it's doing.
So they're going to have to, I mean, at least 12 of them could get into guard outfits and maybe, you know, stow away on an Imperial freighter.
I think,
I can't wait. I think we're going to get it next week.
I think so. I mean, that would be the third episode of the block. And then the two episode finale, which they've sort of already said is going to be the sort of the final arc. I'm excited. I think they will. I think, So what was this? Scott D saying, I wonder if they will have to masquerade as guards for a while. Yeah, I think that's absolutely what they're going to be doing. Just to be able to wait for the ship.
Kind of want to happen.
Prisoners take over the prison.
Prisoners take the shoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
toss the guards down into the pit.
I rewatched last week's episode a couple of days ago with Liz because she hadn't seen it yet. And they hold a shot on the shoe rack quite a lot. It's like, it's similar to the glove rack on Ferrix. It's very similar sort of position. It makes me think maybe we'll see something similar to that as well.
And then what's up with that guard that showed up late?
Yeah, there's something there. Is that related to what was happening on 2? Are these like escapes already happening? Are they already being planned? Is it going to be a mass escape?
Did the level 2, did they really escape and threw the guards on the floor and they got fried?
Yeah. Yeah. The power went out as well. Like, the power cut seemed like that was something they weren't used to. So did they manage to fry the floor and that just sort of caused a quick sort of rolling blackout across the whole thing and then back on? I think there's been an escape. I think there's either a failed escape or a successful one. Like, there's something happening. And is that guy who came late, is he from a different floor? Is he a prisoner? Like, yeah.
It's so good.
It's so interesting. You said it just before we went live. It's like, because I had a theory about a character that I'm sure we'll talk about not being...
All right.
Like on the up and up, and you were like, I don't trust anyone. I'm like, isn't that very, very cool? That we it looks like you're trying to tickle me.
No, it's if you look at the background,
that's the character right there. It's the not trusting anyone, that sort of that paranoia that has been throughout this entire show. It's there, it's really, really interesting. Like, I trust 2 people, 3 people in this show,
Andor?
In the entire show. Cassian Andor, Mon Mothma, and
Luthen?
Melshi, who's also in the prison. That's it. Everyone else, like, I mean, Saw Gerrera, sure, but we know that he's got his own thing going on. But like, yeah, he's at least going to go a bit more crazy as it goes on. So, you know, trust is something you have to earn. I think that's a line from Rogue One. That's a Cassian Andor line from Rogue One.
Yeah.
When they're talking about the gun, right? Let's talk about the stuff going on Coruscant, because we get a revelation here. We find out something about another character. So Mon Mothma is at the Senate and no one gives a shit. She's making her appeal and the lights are switching off. And I feel like that's them just going, bored, not interested, I'm out of this session, see you later. I'm going to pack up and go.
Was that used in the prequels? The lights on and off based on approval or not?
I don't know if it was even approval. I think it might be like attendance. I think that's just them sort of piecing leaving, packing up and going.
In the background, you do see a guy hit a switch and his thing turn off. I didn't know if like
I was trying to see if they were like leaving out the corridor or not, but we definitely don't see them. But yeah, it's either way, it's essentially sort of, it's giving that same signal of we don't care anymore, or we're not interested in your point, we don't agree with you. And then yeah, in the background you can hear a lot of people sort of saying like cheering like long live the empire and things like that. It's like,
oh,
grim, isn't it? It's yeah, gross. you guys are Nazis. You're the ones who are throwing books on the fires, you know, you're right there.
And the dude, yeah, the dude who one of the guards who was dealing with Bix mentioned something. I hang half of him if I could, or whatever he said. It's like, geez Louise, these guys are all bad news.
Yeah, everyone. And then yeah, she gets back in a car and we find out that her cousin is in town, like, and is visiting and is already at the house sort of thing. And it's Vel, which I thought was very interesting. People have been speculating, is Vel related to Luthen, or is anything like this, that, and the other. We didn't really know who she was, but we did think that there was more to her than we'd seen so far. And yeah, she is a rich girl from Chandrella, which is quite an interesting sort of revelation. And it makes you go, okay, was it through Mon Mothma that she got hooked up with Luthen? She wanted to do something. Luthen was looking for people and maybe one recommended the other.
When they said it was her cousin, my immediate thought was like, it wasn't her cousin. It's like when James Bond checks into a hotel and they say, oh, your wife's already upstairs.
Yeah. It's spy stuff.
James Bond isn't married. Yeah. So I didn't know if it was real or not, but the way she interacted with the family and stuff made it like, oh, they are probably actually cousins.
I think so. Yeah. And she's wanting to do more. She's wanting to be back in the fight, essentially. And Mon Mothma's sort of telling her, like, the best thing that you can do right now is to lay low. Like, play the rich girl. Play the rich spoiled girl for a little while. Like, that's how you can be of service. And she's asking, like, what does he have you doing? So they know that Luthen is putting her to work, but I don't think Mon Mothma knows that she was there and responsible for the stuff that went down on Aldani. I don't think she'd be too pleased if she found out that that was her cousin. While she's struggling to get funding through all of this. Like, she's got her own rebellion going on.
So did Vel buy that her niece's dress with Imperial credits?
Very probable.
It seemed like a nice...
Yeah.
It, like, they were conveying that it's a nice gold dress. This is something of high quality.
Yeah.
So I assumed, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh man, she totally bought that with stolen money from the Aldani thing. And Mon Mothma's like, you better not have done anything, been involved with that at all. I do like that Mon Mothma's like, hey, listen, like just pretend like you're a spoiled rich girl for a while. Can you imagine just like having to do that, like all of these guys, the whole point of these Coruscant crew guys is Luthen and Mon Mothma and Vel. They have to pretend to be rich assholes,
upper society dickheads who sort of are all in favor. Mon Mothma sort of is like, yeah, I can be an irritant to the Empire. I think there's no one who's thinking that she's pro Emperor. Like she is, but she's doing it judiciously. She's going through the system. She's playing by the rules. And like, whereas I feel like Luthen's character, like that he's playing, is ambivalent. He's not really worried about any of that. He's got his artifacts. He's got his trinkets, his history. And yeah, if Vel comes in to sort of play the sort of socialite party girl, like rich, like daughter of Chandrella, like situation, it's like, yeah, it's the same thing that the banker guy is doing. What's his name?
Banker guy.
Yep. Tay Colmer.
Tay.
Yeah.
There's so many names. Oh, we have so many names. I need to remember something about the names. But yeah, Jeremy Kelly says Cinta also said maybe she should play spoiled rich girl running away from her family while she was on Ferrix. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's that. Speaking of names, do we know who Kruger is?
Krieger. Anto Krieger. No, we've heard the name a few times now, like last week and this week.
Okay.
Saw Gerrera was talking about him. He was a separatist.
Oh, that's the guy. Got
he
it.
He was a separatist that okay. So still running around doing stuff. But yeah, and Anto
Krieger. We've got a captured rebellion pilot.
Yeah, and they like ISB are already on Anto Krieger, so it's one of those things that I feel like when we do get him involved, it's got to be coming. It's gonna lead to some story crossing over. I feel like potentially that's how Luthen has a big fight or something. Because if I remember rightly, there's a shot in the trailer of him in his ship like blowing up a TIE fighter or something. So. We'll see. That might be something to come still. Or it could just be a trailer shot that they've put in there to misdirect. It wouldn't surprise me.
Star Wars.
Yeah. TIE Fighters in Rogue One related material, you know, there's a history of it. So there's that stuff. And all right, so we were talking about Cinta. And Cinta and everything that she was also one who said to Vel to go play the rich girl. When the ISB were talking about Cassian's mother and why they didn't call her in, like they're using basically she's the last, they know where she is, they've got her under surveillance, but she's going to be the bait, she's going to be the final bit of bait. Basically, once they know that Andor's out there, they can then bring her in to sort of lure him back there. As soon as I heard that they've got eyes on her all the time, it made me go, well shit, we know someone else who's got eyes on her at all times. And it's Cinta. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want Cinta to be a bad guy. I can't imagine it. She seemed like the one who was the most anti-imperial. But then, other than blowing away that one guy on Aldani, we haven't seen her be actively doing anything. She seemed to get away from there easily enough. She's either a very good spy or potentially a double agent.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. This is hard to trust anyone.
Mm-hmm. And where we haven't seen that much of her, I think that's where my sort of element of...
What is she doing this whole time?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe she's just not an important character?
That's like, you know, that's the Occam's razor of it all is that, you know, we don't see much of her because she's not actually that important, but...
She's on the poster, though.
I think she's important because she's important to Vel. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it is. She's important because she's important to Vel, and Vel is an important character. But that's, I don't know, that seems a little cheap for this show that's been doing such a good job of fleshing everyone out individually. So I don't know, if you turned her Imperial, what would that do for Vel? Like
that seems too regular Star Wars.
It does.
Like it sounds like regular Star Wars to me. This
now we're getting ourselves caught in a web. We're working ourselves into a shoot.
Yeah, it's the like this show made something happen that I didn't even expect to happen, which is a sort of relationship between Cyril and Dedra. Like, I honestly don't think it was romantic.
I don't think it is. I don't think it ever will be, but.
But as far as like Imperials go,
yeah,
like this may be considered super romantic is discussing love of being promoted, appreciation for other people's work. Like that's like as romantic as you get as an Imperial. And I think for this show, for that to be a storyline is so unexpected and so bizarre. She literally says, "Are you stalking me?" Just like this is a really, really bizarre relationship between the two that I did not expect to see coming. So having Cinta be a secret Imperial, I feel like it seems so cliche that it's below this show to do that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it is fascinating. The other relationship that Cyril has, of course, is with his mother. Where this week there was a change in that. She's important because she's on the poster. Yeah, it's questionable.
Clyde.
Claude was on the poster for Rise of Skywalker. That is exactly who my mind went to as well. Yeah. Yeah, so Cyril's relationship with his mother changed as well. Like, he got to sit there and look gloomy and glum at home. And then as soon as she starts sort of going in on him, he gets to drop the bomb of, well, I got a promotion. And then he, like, she is very proud. She's very happy for him and everything. And it's, I don't think he cares about her being happy for him. It's that he got to rub it in her face. I think that's why he's pleased at the end of that scene. Not because he wants to please his mum. It's that he gets to, like, win, essentially. He gets to have one
this
up
whole
on
time,
her.
This whole time sitting at the breakfast table, which they do a lot of, these two.
Yep, that's like, their... Yeah, that's
keep
their
waiting for a Han Solo versus Greedo moment. Where he's just got a blaster under the table and just takes her the fuck out. Because, dude, she is just driving me nuts. And I laughed when he started slurping her cereal louder than she was talking. It was
a power play.
Like, shut the fuck
up. It's a power
up.
Play. And he's got to, he's worked himself up to that point where he's got there. He's like, I've got this over you now. And as soon as you're going to talk, I don't give a shit because I've got you beat.
I don't know if it was in the script or not. And I don't know if it was an accident and just the actor being great. I don't know if it was a CG serial or not. But when that one cereal didn't make it into the bowl and landed on the table, and then Cyril looks at it, picks it up, and throws it in his bowl, like, that's such a character-defining thing. Like, he's so organized, and he won't let anything go, no matter how dirty it is.
That's brilliant, because that piece of cereal is Cassian. Like, he's always going to get...
Was it an accident? Do you think it was in the script? I need to know if the cereal... coming, not making it into the bowl was in the script.
It's too perfect for the character for it not to be, I think.
But the actor picking it up and putting it in, if that was an accident and that was improv, it's like some crazy metaphor that just like in a bowl full of cereal, I need to make sure I have just this one.
It might be, there's a shot for people who watched House of the Dragon. There was a shot, I think in like episode 8 or something, of... the king, like, his crown falls on the steps and then another character comes and picks it up and puts it on his head. That was something that happened in the rehearsal when they were like blocking the shot. It wasn't planned, it wasn't scripted. That just happened, and then that character came and did that action just like in character as they were rehearsing it. And so they put it in, they shot it, they framed it up perfectly and everything like that. But it wasn't it wouldn't surprise me if that's something where a similar sort of thing happened where it wasn't scripted, but then when it happened, it was like, oh shit, that's excellent. Like, and it so perfectly is a metaphor for him and his character.
I want to,
like,
know everything about it. I want to know, is it a CG serial? Did they do a bunch of takes to get one serial to fall out? It wasn't an accident.
Yeah.
If it was an accident, then the brilliant acting to take it and put it in, throw it in.
This
the thing.
Is the sort of stuff that I want in one of those
scene.
Yeah, I want this in one of the behind the scenes docs. Not, hey, we didn't use the volume. We know you didn't use the volume. We know that these scenes are brilliant. Like, but like, go dig into the minutia. Like, this is the stuff that we need to see. Yeah.
Commentary. We need a Tony Gilroy commentary.
Ah, give us commentary for all of these things. Like, please.
It's crazy.
I miss commentaries. I miss commentaries badly. Why? Like, I mean, I know that I think some people have done it, but like, release, if they don't want to release it officially, put it out as a podcast. Put out podcast commentaries that we can sort of sync up ourselves. Like, I think Kevin Smith might have done that, or Edgar Wright potentially. They're the sort of guys who I could see doing that. It's excellent. It is such a good moment, that serial drop. We got another scene with Perrin talking about, it's the scene with Perrin and Vel and Mon Mothma, their dinner scene, and the daughter as well, Leda, sort of saying like, yeah, mum's old boyfriend was here as well. It's like, dickhead, like, what are you doing? Up. Just shut up. Like, someone mentioned it. I missed it in the comments. Let me see if I can find it here.
It was up top.
She's gonna screw something up with the rebellion potentially. It wouldn't surprise me if she's sitting in front of the wrong people that drops some others in the shit, and it might cause a riff or something to go wrong. There you go. Yeah. She needs to learn. There it is. That's the comment that I was thinking of. Scott,
daughter is definitely going to screw up something with the rebellion, right? I mean, again, like, they're going to blow up the Death Star.
Yeah, we know that they're going to be okay. Mon Mothma is going to survive, but we also assume that her family isn't going to be around for, like, in her life. Anyway,
what we've seen of Mon Mothma in the films, though, is her sneaking away to Yavin 4, her sneaking away to the Rebel fleet. Like, during the Battle of Endor, she's not there.
Not that we see, no.
Yeah, so I'm assuming she shows up for the briefing just to be like, hey, this is what's going on. I'm going to peace out back to Coruscant.
She's been, like, on Home One a lot in, like, the lead up to Endor in the comics. That's sort of where the comics are at the moment. They've been doing all that stuff. She's been on Home One a lot there. But, yeah, it's definitely a case of... We don't know. We don't know where the family are, if there's a family around still. I feel like this show is going to go through all of that, though, I think.
Yeah.
In Rebels, she's definitely on the run. That's where she comes in contact with the Ghost crew, and they take her, I believe, to Yavin. Yeah, it's great. But yeah, Perrin sucks. Perrin's the worst. Perrin is, like, the most, like, I hate this guy sort of character in the entire show.
He needs to die, right? But that's not this show.
It's not this show. Like, if anything, like, he's gonna turn her in. Like, if he walks into the ISB office, it's like, I found out something.
Or something's gonna happen where Mon Mothma is, you know, suspected to be part of the rebellion because of some signal came out of her house. And Luthen's somehow going to be able to pin it on Perrin, and he goes away to make parts in a prison. Like I could see, instead of him dying, I think framing
last
him
shot of him is him on Narkina 5
on floor 2.
Yeah, that'd be really good. I'd like that. Or I could see it a case of, like, Mon Mothma has to sacrifice Tay because, like, basically throw him under the bus to save her own skin. Or something happens and Perrin is trying to pin it on Tay, but it's actually Mon Mothma, and so she has to keep Shtum to save her own skin. Something like that, maybe.
Scott D says, I wonder if John Null, Gary Whitta, or Gareth Edwards have any input on the story of this series, or is it Tony Gilroy and his brother?
I know for a fact that Gary Whitta doesn't. He works a lot with the comedy group Kind of Funny. He's on there all the time, and he's talked about loving the show, how much he's impressed with the show every week, but that he doesn't have any input. Like, he wasn't brought in to do anything on this show.
I feel like it's Tony Gilroy's definitely making this feel like Rogue One. Like, it feels like Rogue One, and I can only guess that they probably talked with each other about it, or Tony Gilroy maybe sent a pitch to those guys just to let them know this is what we're doing.
I think it's more of a kind thank you note. But by the time Tony Gilroy came into Rogue One, like, all those guys were done. Like, Gary Whitta's script, like, his pitch was early on. Like, even by the time they were shooting that movie, he was done with it, and he'd been sort of moved on to other things. Gareth Edwards shot, like, the basic stuff, and then was around, I think, with Gilroy at the end, but not too much. And John Noel, he was the pitch. He was the ideasman.
Yeah. He's busy making Razor Crest models, and
he's doing stuff. I'm sure that if anyone of anyone, like, that knows about it, it would be John Noel. But that's more of a case of, like,
you got to realize, like, the same with, like, comic books. Like, it's if you're a writer on a comic book, you're coming into a previously created IP. So if you're coming in to do Batman, you know, I'm going to do my time working on this Batman. I'm going to leave. People may take that idea, build off of it.
It's a franchise.
Characters I created. And so it could be just like they know, all those guys that created Rogue One know that it's not exactly their thing to expand on. But I can see Tony Gilroy being like reaching out to those guys and just being like, hey, I'm
thanks for like creating the character of Cassian Andor. Like, he's been such a rich like storytelling device.
It's probably literally a conversation of like, hey, I have a story for Cassian Andor. Want to hear it? Check this out. It's going to be this. It's going to be a prison. It's going to be a prison break show. It's going to be a heist show. And it's going to be whatever the next thing is. And they're probably like, oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Guerrilla Warfare. And then show. That's it. Yeah. 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 I think that's the most likely. I don't think they've got any input on it whatsoever.
Like, I don't think that Nicholas Brittle had any sort of conversation with Michael Giacchino. They could have. I know this based on just Twitter that Michael loves the score by Nicholas Brittle. Nicholas Brittle is just fucking knocking it out of the park. We got a new Andor opening theme.
Love this week. Really, it was my first note.
Very electronic.
Like, it's changed every week, and they've been so good because it's the same theme, but just like redone every time. It's like a new cover of it every time. It's so cool.
So it's one of those things where it's like, listen, there's no complaints. No. People keep calling it slow and boring, and I feel like the people who call it slow and boring, I don't know, Mandalorian's coming out.
Yeah, they've got February. They've got plenty. Like, I'm sure that they enjoyed other stuff. There's enough for them out there. Like,
go back and watch Book of Boba Fett. There's tons of excitement to watch. Obi-Wan was really exciting for us. Obi-Wan got tossed into those coals and set on fire by Darth Vader. Like, all this stuff is fun. And this one is in its own little area, even to the point where like Disney Plus has already moved on to Tales of the Jedi and putting that first if you go to the Star Wars page, Tales of the Jedi is first and then Andor. And I'm like, but Andor's brand new. It just came out today.
For me, on the main like Disney Plus homepage, Andor's still new. Like, it wasn't last week. Tales of the Jedi took it last week because it was like a single season dump all at once. But this one was back to Andor.
But the thing is, I like that Andor's kind of
just doing its thing.
Doing its own thing.
Just leave it to it, please.
And Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm are letting it breathe.
Yeah.
I think they're super
proud of it. I think they are. I'd be shocked if they're not, but like, I think they're super proud of it.
They're
going to
submit it for Emmys and not just technical Emmys.
No.
They better, I was going to say Gwendolyn Christie, who plays Mon Mothma, Genevieve O'Reilly.
Genevieve, yep.
Andy
Serkis, if you just want like supporting like bit player.
Andy Serkis.
Diego Luna. Diego Luna would be great.
Should all get submitted for Emmys. Is this like I don't watch Game of Thrones. I could give a shit about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But is that kind of what this show is like? Like, a lot of conversation, a lot of political intrigue, a lot of characters
there's a lot of that stuff.
It's more like that. It's definitely more like that than regular Star Wars.
Definitely.
I've never been into Game of Thrones or Succession or Lord of Ring of Power or any of these sort of grown-up popular shows that
I think if this has any competition, it will be with The Bear this year.
Because
I don't know. We watched all through The Bear again, and I was trying to think of where that would get submitted with Emmys and stuff because of the weird categories that they put things in. I was like, it's funny, but it's not a comedy, but they sometimes put stuff into comedies. And I was like, they might submit it into comedies, but then I don't know. Succession seems to run away with that every year at the moment. And I don't know. It's tough because I don't want Andor, which is a drama. It should be submitted to drama, but then you've got the competition of the HBO shows and now Amazon and everything.
I just want it to be submitted.
Exactly. Literally. Nominations.
Like, Tristan says the actor plays Cyril. Stevie says the actor that plays Dedra. Literally everybody on the show.
It's an ensemble that everyone is so good. There isn't a weak link.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Did you see the news? It was late last night for me over here. And I may have had a drink or two. So it was sort of, it went over my head a little bit at the time, but it's just come to me now. The woman who plays Bix has apparently signed up for more Star Wars.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know. I didn't read into it. It was late, as I said, and I just saw the headline. So she signed in. I don't know if that means that she's going to be, if it's for season two, if maybe she wasn't signed for a season two, or if it's a case of, nope, they're going to do more shows and we get that ground level through the original trilogy, like ground level rebellion, essentially, would be very cool if we got some more of that.
Or this could be a, like, like an introduction to a new character. Like, yeah, as far as, like, let's say popular character in comics, Dr. Aphra.
Yep.
I know that Dr. Aphra is a big character in comics, probably goes on all kinds of adventures, but we don't really know her origin story. So maybe it's something along the lines of that. Maybe it doesn't have to be ground level. Maybe she's this great pilot of the rebellion. Maybe she's a head of a rogue squadron type of a thing.
That's but we my don't. Thought. It's something like that would be lovely. Like, yeah, it's a different group.
Like, yeah, I would like to see a spinoff. Like,
it's similar to how Cassian was this character from the movie who on paper doesn't seem like he's going to get his own spinoff. It doesn't, like, that's what everyone was like, what a weird show to do a spinoff of. And that's why it's sort of snuck under the radar for a lot of people for a long time.
I guess
it's similar to that. It would be a spinoff of a spinoff.
She's kind of a blank slate.
You can do whatever you want with her.
She can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So
same with this show being like a prison break, a heist, whatever. Like, you can tell any sort of story. Just a junk shop runner. She just runs a junk shop. Just, it's Tales of the Ferret.
I just want pilot. I want a pilot series.
Me too. We all want that.
And if she joins up with the Rebellion, have her be part of like
Rogue Squadron.
Echo Squadron or Rogue Squadron.
Just show Rogue Squadron. Like, we know that it exists after A New Hope and up through, probably close to at least, Battle of Endor. I've always gone with the sort of the old EU version of the, they went back to Red Squadron just in name only because of like the nod back to Red Squadron first time they attacked the Death Star, but that actually Red Squadron Endor was still Rogue Group. Like, that's what I've always sort of headcanoned. And if that's the case, then awesome. And if she's a pilot that we just haven't ever seen on screen there, brilliant. Like, cool. Her and Cassian are the only people that maybe escaped Ferrix. And she joins up with the Rebellion. And while he's being off being a spy, she's off being a pilot. Like, please. Mm. Yeah. She's an open book. Like, you can do whatever you want. But I thought it was just a cool bit of news that she's signed on to do some more stuff.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it's not just like season two of Andor.
Yeah. I'd like to think that all these guys are already signed on for that. anyone who's going to be back should already be signed up because they start shooting it next month, I think, or this month.
Right. Just don't make her a bounty hunter. There hasn't been a bounty hunter in this show.
No.
There hasn't been a lightsaber.
Smuggler. Well, I mean, kind of a smuggler, but not really. More of a thief.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have called Cassian a smuggler. Definitely not.
No.
Not in the traditional sense.
No. No Jedi, no lightsabers. A TIE fighter or two. Yep. We've seen one X-Wing and it wasn't flying.
Yep.
No space battles. Not a single space battle.
Now, it does look like there's at least a space escape coming, but not a battle.
We've had an escape. I guess the TIE fighters were chasing the ship, but the ship wasn't firing back because it wasn't a gunship.
I wouldn't call that a space battle.
But, fuck, dude, this show is so not Star Wars. And it's my favorite Star Wars right now.
Absolutely. By a mile. I love it.
I mean, I might put it above Solo.
Wow, that's high.
I mean, we're not done yet. I mean, they got to stick this landing of season one.
Yeah.
I feel like we're so close to the end. We have three more episodes and 10, 11, 12. And I'm like, gosh, can you pull it off? Can you pull off not angering me over something stupid? You almost did it today. With the shot taken from Star Wars. Almost, but I'm like...
It's okay. So minimal. Come on. Like, that... I mean, but that's how high you've got this show, is that, like...
But they're so trying to not be Star Wars.
Mm. They're doing it as well.
I chalked that up to the director being like, I'm making a Star Wars. I need to do something Star Wars-y. And maybe it was just his way of proving that he's a fan of the OG Star Wars of 1977.
I honestly wouldn't surprise me if that, either way, if it was that or if it was not even a consideration, it's just film shorthand.
I want season one. This is how I want season one to end. This is the big climax of season one.
Hit me.
Andor meets Mon Mothma. That's it. That's all I want.
Yes, yeah.
That's enough. I don't need it to happen in the next episode or the episode 12, the last shot. They meet each other. They come.
Has he got Luthen's ship? Is he flying Luthen's ship at that point? Because Luthen's died, but the ship is pre-programmed to take Cassian Andor back to Mon Mothma or something because of his little droid that he's got on that ship. Something like that, maybe. Who knows? Yeah. It's a great show. And we will be back next week talking about episode 10. Man, I don't want it to end. We're so lucky that we've got so many of these, though. It's so great. It's such a good show. But yeah, next week. And you can find that at Live Action Star, Live Action SW on YouTube, all the socials, liveactionsw.com. Yeah. Leave us a review, comment and like and do all of those things. We don't talk about it enough because normally at this point we're in a rush. But next week, we'll be back to regularly scheduled time for the UK. Should be. No, it's not.
Next week, we're not at the same time. We're showing up a little bit later.
We're showing a little bit later.
For those of you, we're going to be an hour and a half later than normal.
Yeah.
Because we will be joined, or we're scheduled to be joined by with Eddie Pence. Eddie Pence is coming back on the show.
Always a great
guest. Eddie's been on all of our seasons. Mm-hmm. of new Star Wars TV, and he's agreed to show up next week, but I need to double check to make sure he's still cool with it.
Yep.
If it doesn't happen next week, it's going to happen before this is up. Yeah. Which I mean, I guess that would be the final episode because we're down to three. So, but no, he said he'd show up on Wednesday.
I'm sure around 9 o'clock
Pacific time. What is that? Noon Eastern time. And then I'm not sure what time it is.
Should be 5 PM. UK. Boom. But we will tweet it all out. So yeah, definitely follow the Instagram and the Twitter, whichever you prefer.
Yeah.
I mean, even Facebook, if you use that hellscape.
If you come to YouTube, it'll say what time it starts in your time zone. So
that's the important one.
Just hit that like bell icon and you'll be notified.
Yeah.
I'm excited for next week.
I am. I'm excited. I'm always excited. I'm excited to watch this again later in the week. It's great.
I have yet to rewatch an episode, but
I've been enjoying doing it. It's normally been over the weekend sometime that I've been doing it. So I've given it a few days breathing. But yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. Love it. And I look forward to talking about it with you next week. Until then, everybody, don't give in to hate.
Celebrate the love.
Punch it.